While Oscar fever has been sweeping the silver screen, we're turning to the small screen today to see what we might expect on our television sets over the next couple of weeks. And to help us decipher the TV guide is our guest all the way over in the thick of it, sunny Los Angeles, the journalist Richard Bence, who's poised with a triple threat of shows that might cause you to become a bit of a hermit this March. From the return of the HBO comedy Togetherness to Louis C.K.'s surprise new series Horace and Pete, and all the drama and glitter of RuPaul's Drag Race. That's coming up to its 100th episode. I'm Ben Ryland, and that's all ahead of us today on the Monocle Arts Review. Our first stop today is at HBO, who are airing the second series of the Duplass Brothers comedy Togetherness. Richard, welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. For our listeners who are unfamiliar with this show, set up the basic premise of it and perhaps just bring us up to speed with the first series.
Togetherness, as you say, has just been renewed for its 8-episode second airing, its second season, which premiered on February 21st. It's set in Eagle Rock, which is an area in East Los Angeles. It's a show about middle class and almost middle-aged white people whose lives, for whatever reason, mostly just haven't delivered. It balances two pairs, Brett and Michelle, Tina and Alex. One is a married couple. One is the best friend of the man in the married couple, who is Mark Duplass, who is the creator and director of the show. And it's really a balance of these two pairs on either side of the midlife divide. So one pair has settled down, the other definitely has not. But they're all thrown into this one house in Eagle Rock together after a series of bad starts from the first series. So now we're going into the second series where chaos ensued at the end of series one, and we're seeing how that develops in series two.
Well, the first episode of the new season of Togetherness has already aired, and HBO have kindly issued a snappy recap of it. Let's take a listen.
There's a couple of fans out here.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday!
All right. Yay!
Things have been so weird. I feel like he's still mad at me.
There's my girl. There's my girl.
It's so hard to keep it in. It's so hard. And Brad's being like the greatest husband ever.
What is your deal?
It's not that easy for me to be around you.
Why?
You broke my heart.
Richard, I think coming from a few different HBO series that we've seen in the past, we've sort of come to expect this certain level of sheen to come from an HBO drama. Does this one sort of match in with the rest of the HBO family?
Yes and no. I mean, one show, by the way, that is airing on Netflix at the moment, which is a sort of running mate of this, is Judd Apatow's Love, which is also about self-absorbed, affluent white people screwing up their lives. But I'd say that this one is a step above that. This is really a comedy for adults. Yes, it does have the gloss and the sheen of, for example, Girls, but I think it's definitely a West Coast companion to that. You know, the setting of Eagle Rock is no accident. Duplass has said himself, the creator of the show and the main lead, he said Eagle Rock is the place where hipsters go to die. And I think this show is very much about the beauty in the anxiety of aging.
So just going back to some of the early series that really put HBO on the map, you've got something like Sex and the City, which was very much a graduation from the independent film movement of the 1990s. And that's sort of coalesced with a lot of the work of filmmakers such as Woody Allen or Noah Baumbach. And it's sort of created this different level of television series. Where do you think this one fits in? Is it really graduating beyond that and bringing that sort of feeling into today's age? Or do you feel like it's more of a throwback?
I definitely say that it's very much of the moment in that if you look back to those shows, for example, Sex and the City, the high gloss of those very rarefied lives, the other character in that show being the city of New York, for example, in Sex and the City. So it was high gloss, as far away from reality, really, as you could possibly go. These shows, and in particular Togetherness, it is very much focusing on the humdrum, the boringness and the aching failure of midlife. I'd say much closer to the Girls' mode, which is obviously a different age category. For girls, and specifically for love, the one I mentioned, Apatow's latest, that's very much about people who are trying to make something of their lives. This is the sort of next step. So this is about a bunch of people who, for whatever reason, have not fulfilled their dreams and ambitions, LA being the perfect backdrop for that, because it's a city full of people who have come here from all over the States, indeed all over the world, to live their dream. It's fascinating to watch. The sister, who's played by Amanda Peet, her character name is Tina Morris. She's Michelle's sister. She is a car crash waiting to happen from the word go. She's this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed character who storms in from Houston. Apparently things didn't work out too well there. She is a transplant. She invites herself to set up shop, basically, in her sister's house. It is really the relationship between her and this chap who we meet, basically Mark Duplass' his best friend, who is a failed actor. And he is interesting too because he does not fit the conventional mold of what a lead man would be in, for example, you know, Mr. Big, or indeed any of those more glossy shows. He is a slob. He is the living embodiment of a failed dream.
Well, season two of Togetherness is underway now on HBO over in the US, and you can catch that at 10:30 p.m. every Sunday. Now, Louis C.K. recently surprised fans with a brand new online series called Horace and Pete. He put the first episode up at the end of January with a note saying, "I made something, and for $5 you can find out what it is." And what it is a new series set in an Irish bar in New York owned by Horace and Pete, played by Louis and Steve Buscemi. Richard, tell us a little bit more about the series.
Many people will know Louis C.K. from his FX comedy show called Louis. Even more people will now know him as the presenter of the short film Doc at the Oscars, which went down a storm. That's in its fifth series, I think. You can watch all five series on Netflix. That show was a comedy, a profound exploration of male failure, but still a comedy. Horace and Pete is really not a comedy at all. If anything, it's a black comedy. It's disturbingly direct. It's clearly his bid for greatness. Like you say, it's set in a Brooklyn bar. It's a bit like the anti-Cheers. Very dark, but fantastically human. Not really a comedy at all. It's written as a piece of drama, filled by characters who embody the lost, the sad, the forgotten. It's about the cruel bonds of family and the despair caused by the passing of time. It explores themes like marriage, divorce, and self-destruction like no other show I've seen. The cast is spectacular. Jessica Lange is one of the customers of this dive bar who props up the bar. Eddie Falco, Steve Buscemi. And by the way, a theme song written and performed by no less than Paul Simon. The talent that is attracted to this man is extraordinary. I'd say just from the offset that the very production and direct-to-consumer format-busting distribution model feels like a political act. It's delivered through his website, so there's no shenanigans with pandering to a network or indeed a streaming service. It's his own creation. He is, in this sense, the buffalo, not the mosquito. He is the one, the auteur. And it too has therefore the freedom, I think, to take risks. So, for example, it's set in the very immediate present. There's a reference to Trump that comes up on the TV in the bar. It takes a very dim view of the present. I'll just be very honest about that. It's anti-technology, anti-hipster, even about the struggles of being a small business. It feels like a sort of bleak stage play.
Well, let's hear a clip of it now before we talk about this any further. Here's Horace, played by Louis C.K., dealing with a young customer who feels he's been a bit shortchanged.
If he looks like him, he pays $3. If he looks like you, he pays $4.50.
So just out-and-out discrimination? Are you aware how totally unfair and not okay that is? I mean, I'm Jewish. I'm gay.
Here's the thing. You're getting more for your money than he is.
How so?
Because, see, you come here and you make fun of the place because it's an old Brooklyn dive bar, so you and your friends get to enjoy that part of it, and then also you get to have a beer. But he just gets the beer. See, you're here ironically.
So it's like a douche tax?
Yeah, kind of.
Acceptable.
Louis C.K. has really carved himself out such a strange and original career, and this is obviously progressing on with that sort of theme. But just going back to that model of putting it up on his own website for purchase, obviously there are lots of pleasures that would come creatively for Louis to take that sort of approach, complete creative control, obviously, and probably going to be quite industry disrupting as well. Do you think that we are inching closer to a point where perhaps web platforms such as Louis C.K.'s own website, obviously Netflix, and we have Amazon as well being the giants of the industry, but this concept of delivering television via the web for a lot of consumers will perhaps be seen in exactly the same way as a traditional network? And this is just another hint that that is perhaps becoming closer for all of us.
Yes, I do. Absolutely. And by the way, just as a consumer, the way one goes to his website, the whole tone of his website is totally him, whoever's done the crafting of the copy for it. So when you go to actively purchase, I think the first episode was $5 and then it goes to $3 and then $2. It is in itself a very satisfying process. So the stage setup, the play-like setup of the performance is matched by this direct-to-consumer delivery model, and it's intensely satisfying. I can't really describe how it is like that, but what it does is it accelerates the feeling of intimacy that you have with the people in this performance. You do feel on some level that you are in Horace and Pete's bar with them, and that is absolutely because of this very intimate dialogue and relationship that you have because you are sidestepping all the normal formats.
Fascinating stuff. That is Horace and Pete, which is available now to purchase on Louis C.K.'s website, which is louisck.net. And finally, Richard, we couldn't possibly finish today's show without talking about RuPaul's Drag Race, which returns for its 8th season, including its 100th episode and contestant. Let's take a listen.
Girl, get sent for some serious shade.
Are there any shady bitches in this group? Oh, okay.
If I want to do ratchet drag next week, can you give me any tips?
If you want to do, like, memorable drag next week, I can give you some tips.
Baby, the shade.
And some ruthless competition.
This is season 8, and people are just bringing it.
That bus comes by, I'm going to throw her first.
Yeah! Oh, my God.
Well, Richard, I almost want to ask you if we can expect any surprises for the 100th episode, but I feel as though we've sort of come to expect surprises with every episode of RuPaul, haven't we?
Absolutely. Just in case anybody's not aware of who RuPaul is, he has had a career on television since the early 90s. He is the world's most famous drag queen. Just as a backdrop, when it comes to hurdling adversity, dismantling stereotypes and maintaining relevance in a fleeting commercial landscape, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone more transformative than RuPaul. He is a veteran of the industry. The show aside, just the person at the helm is a very raw talent. If Louis C.K. is the new Jesus Christ, then some say that RuPaul is the modern-day Martin Luther King. It's easy to trivialise RuPaul's Drag Race. However, it's essentially a loving pastiche of all those reality TV shows like America's Next Top Model and Project Runway. It's like a sort of funhouse mirror to those shows. But in its 8th season now, which airs on Monday, it is a record-breaking ratings success. So it's the highest-rated show, actually, on its network, which is Logo. I think what's interesting about it is we've been aware of the inclusion crisis that's been drawn to our attention in film, television, and digital streaming. RuPaul's success, given that, is hard to ignore.
I think you're absolutely right. The cultural impact of RuPaul has been absolutely enormous. And to think that when this TV network Logo, which is a specifically LGBTI network in the US, when that was launched, it was considered such an immense risk to spend all of this money catering towards a demographic that would potentially be so controversial at the time. And it's turned out to be so successful, largely thanks to the franchise created by RuPaul here. What are your thoughts going into the next season, though, taking away all of the social progress that RuPaul has resulted in? Can we still expect the series to continue excelling?
Well, that is a good point. I mean, reality TV, in its broadest sense, does feel as though it is coming to a close, especially when you think about the other shows that we've mentioned today. But I think what Drag Race has that's different from those other shows... So reality TV basically just preys on the lowest common denominator. It's by definition manufactured and fake and sometimes a bit gross. Where Drag Race differs from those other shows, and what we have coming up, I think, is at its core and at its heart is this unique focus on celebrating the underdog. So it's about a group of people coming together to find power as individuals, and that will continue. So as long as that has that strong message at its core, I don't see how it will run out of steam. RuPaul has made reference to the fact that his star has been in the ascendant totally in conjunction with the political climate of the time. So in the 90s, obviously, Clinton. And then his career went dormant during the reign of Bush. It's no coincidence that we are in the 8th series of RuPaul's Drag Race, which chimes with when Obama came into office. It will be interesting to see, you know, with the new presidential campaign coming up at the end of this year, how that affects shows like RuPaul's Drag Race. That aside, you can't take away from the fact that he has become a champion for entrepreneurs everywhere who don't fit the mold.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. That is RuPaul's Drag Race, which starts on March 7th on the Logo Network over in the US. And sadly, that does bring us to the end of today's show. Special thanks to my guest today, Richard Bentz, over in Los Angeles. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll talk about books. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.